It's time for the mid-month hot pocket, Melfus.
Oh, I'm so excited. I love the pockets that are warm.
Do you like them that are hot?
I like them when they're hot, but not too hot because you burn your mouth on them. And again, I think I like the ones most with the bacon and the cheese. Is this going to have bacon and cheese in it, Robert?
It's got bacon and cheese every month. And sometimes it's a little hot. It burns the roof of your mouth, but that's just the cost of doing business.
And it's not without controversy this month, so let's get into it.
Well, boy, a lot of tragedy around the world. Somalia, Myanmar, Las Vegas, very close to home, just absolutely horrendous. And related to that, to the Las Vegas shootings massacre, we want to put a call out to our colleagues in Las Vegas and anyone who would like to talk about that, to break down what happened from the EM perspective, from disaster management, or frankly, what it felt like to be there. Contact us at contact@mrap.org.
Yeah, because those of us that weren't there are sort of having a difficulty getting our head around how did you look after so many patients all at once? Like, even at a big trauma center like LA County, we would be totally overwhelmed. So how did that go down? What did you do?
And on a more mundane note, back to the MRAP Operations Center, we sent out a huge survey to the listenership. Actually, it was a small survey, but with a huge response. Small survey, huge response.
Yes. So thank you to all of those people that answered that. It was a very open-ended question. It was like, what should we do next? What do you want to see? Lots of people gave us lots of feedback. And yes, the app, everybody's talking about the app. Get search on the app, get CME on the app. We're going to do that. It's going to take a little while, but that's definitely in production. But one person, next, not true. A whole bunch of people said, could you make the PDFs so you can print out the PDF per section instead of the one giant PDF that we create? We are doing that. And I think that'll start next month. So if you just want to print out the PDF for a particular section, because Rob has been so articulate in his explanations, then you can just print out that single PDF for that single chapter. So that's coming next month.
I love that idea, because when I'm at work, I print out the PDF of the episode pretty regularly. Like, wow, what are those doses? How exactly do I do the sequence of an awake intubation or something like that? And then you end up printing out all 12 pages of it and think, wow, I didn't need the thing on scratchy knees. I just needed awake intubation.
Exactly. So that's fixed. And there's so much other stuff that people have asked about. We'll talk more about it in the coming months because we're going to make some great changes.
Well, we've gotten a lot of letters recently, and not the kind that has a $20 check from your grandmother folded inside. Much email on our segment on EM in Uganda.
Yeah, and before you get into this controversial topic, I should say that if you're hearing voices in the background, it's because we have half of Kenya living with us right now. We have 7 Kenyans living with us for the next year. And that's a whole story in itself that I want to tell you about. But 2 of the young kids are having bone marrow transplants as a potential cure for their sickle cell disease. And there's lots to discuss, but that'll be for another time, Rob. It's an interesting time here in the Herbert household.
Well, you just told me the story of that for the half an hour before we started recording, and I can't wait to get into details of that. But back to our email on EMN Uganda, pretty much all of it was positive. I mean, people wanting to go there, people interested in having that experience. But the one that we got that was not so positive relates to this question. Heather Hammerstedt and I were talking about her amazing organization that she helped start and is providing emergency care where before none existed. And whenever I hear about things like this, I always wonder, why put your energy overseas? Why not put your energy into underserved areas in your own country? And here's how the question came out. Why do this in Africa, and why not, say, rural Mississippi that has, you know, just as much need for quality medical care?
I edited that part and it went straight over my head. I now realize how obnoxious that statement is.
Well, as you can imagine, Mississippi took umbrage to that question as follows. And here's the email. Now that the insult has aired nationally, I was writing in hope of a national apology to the nurses of Mississippi. It's a blatant insult to the nationally standardized education and practice standards that rural Mississippi nurses adhere to. And to that, I say, right on. I'm with you all the way. I can see how that question was construed as a slight, because clearly as it came out, it was a slight. but I work in rural EDs, and the spirit of the question was rural areas are underserved and would surely benefit from volunteer energy. And the question that I have to myself, and when I see these things going on, is why not put your energy in your local area? And that's not a criticism on people who are doing it overseas, because clearly there is tremendous need there, but it's more of a personal question, like why did you decide to do it there and not closer to home?
This is a much broader discussion because it does come up all the time. And this is not about being a nationalist or a globalist or anything like that. It's like where your heart takes you. And again, we have the seven Kenyans living with us. And that came about because one nurse friend of ours went to Kenya and fell in love with the people and the needs and now lives there and provides palliative care. I wouldn't want her to be anywhere else. I'm so glad she does what she does.
All right. Challenge Coin nomination. This is Val Serio, nominated by Joe Johnsey.
Val had a pediatric patient with altered mental status and hypotension. He couldn't figure out the cause, but suspected it was related to an accidental overdose of liquid clonidine. His patient had recently been prescribed. He stabilized the patient. He admitted the patient. However, it didn't stop there. He got the clonidine and had it sent for analysis to determine the concentration. Are you ready for this? He found it was 100 times the prescribed concentration. Val, Challenge Coin is on the way for going above and beyond the call of duty.
That sounds like a TV show. I think I just binge-watched that on Netflix.
Man. That's right.
How would you even do that?
It's called House of Clonidine or something. I don't know. That's weird. Oopsie.
Melvis, now we're going to get to some easy listening, the actual filling of the hot pocket, some lessons hard learned. I don't want to say too much because it's going to end up being like a quadruple introduction because the piece really introduces itself. When I'm working with a new attending, freshly delivered from residency, the first thing I say is that this is the beginning of your emergency medicine fellowship. You think you're an attending now, and you are, but really, think of yourself as a fellow, because now is where you really learn how to care for patients, how to run an ED. All that time in residency was to prepare you for this. And the reason I say this is because, man, I wish someone said that to me when I was a new attending. Anyone who's been through the first year out of residency knows that the learning curve is incredibly steep. And instead of covering it up with bravado, I think the message should be that we being the more experienced providers and the department as a whole, we have your back. It's an atmosphere of learning and support and not punitive penalties. How about that, Alan?
Sounds great to me, Rob.
That guy is Alan Seeloff, emergency physician practicing at St. Joseph Mercy Hospital in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and he just finished his first year of attendinghood with some lessons learned. And before we get into the wisdom that you've learned this year, I want to give you the biggest thing that I learned my first year out, although it's actually probably took several years, not just one year.
What is that, Rob?
Don't be a wanker. Don't be a wanker. There it is. Number one bit of advice.
That's always wise advice, no matter what you're doing.
That's right. That's right. Let's get to your roadmap for the first year out.
So I got to say, one of the biggest things that I learned starting right in July was that working as an ED attending, the microscope is huge. This is professionalism on steroids once you take the reins. The things you may have been able to get away with as a resident, the jokes, the comments, everyone's watching. Everyone from nurses, techs, patients, families that are at the coffee station, even the consulting surgeon, everyone's eyes are on you. And everything that happens in your department falls back on you as the attending. There's no room for errors. There's no room for missteps. This isn't something that's just going to land you in your program director's office. It's your job.
Now, when you say that there's no room for errors, you're going to make errors, right? There is room for errors. And I don't think you should be super stressed that you cannot ever, ever, never make a mistake, but just act like a pro. You're now a pro.
You will make a mistake. I've made them more than one. I probably made them in the last 6 hours, but be wary that everyone is watching from the moment you walk in the door.
If you could go back and talk to yourself as you're starting your first shift, I mean, you talk about it's professionalism on steroids, right? You kind of act like an attending, you know, you need to act attending-ish. Tactically, what does that mean? Act this way, don't act that way. I mean, the jokes, you know what, you're going to joke around with staff a little bit. You don't want to be inappropriate and don't want to be a wise guy at the sake of patient care. But yes, I mean, you got to kind of ease your way into it and not be Groucho Marx on day one. But what would be your advice to your 1 year ago self?
Be the person that people want to come up to in the middle of the shift, whether it's the nurses, the techs, the families, the consultants. Be the person that's open with a smile, that people feel comfortable expressing their concerns, their thoughts, and their ideas to. You want to be the person that your department wants to go to.
Reflecting that back, be approachable. There can be a tendency, especially when you're stressed, when you're first starting out, you know, if you have anyone approach you and take away any little quanta of time from what you're doing, it'd be like, oh God, I don't have time. But just reset. Yeah, how can I help you? Or Let me finish this. I'll help you in a moment.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better. One of the other big things that I came into never having done as a resident was supervising APPs. For me, one of the most difficult things when I'm trying to get myself together, establish my practice, is to then relinquish control and staff patients, sometimes more, sometimes less, with people that I'm trusting to represent myself when I'm signing charts fresh out of residency. Most of the time, these people have been doing this longer than I've been in med school or even undergraduate. And managing and working with these individuals took me a long time to get a grip on, something that I'm still working on.
What do you feel like was the first / biggest mistake that you made in interacting or supervising or working with APPs that you wish you knew now?
Micromanaging to the point where I was putting in orders on some of their patients. That was the biggest thing that hit me in the face, was you have to learn to relinquish control and establish trust. And there will be people you trust more, some people you'll trust a little less, but it's learning others' practice patterns and then letting things go when you feel comfortable with it.
Invariably, there's going to be disagreements with somebody who you're supervising, where you think things should be done this way, they think it should be done that way, and you can have a tendency, well, I'll just take over and micromanage. And gradually, you know, you learn to pull back. But what was the step, or what was the process where said, okay, here's how I'm going to do that, here's how I'm going to pull back?
So I got in the habit of reading every triage note for everyone that walked through the department, my patients, the APP's patients, the residents' patients, and looking at the vitals, medical history, etc. Because as you and I both know, when you're working a night shift and you're seeing 30 people, sometimes you don't always read that triage note or see that slight fever. And then I moved to asking open-ended questions. I'd bring things up such as, I noticed your patient had a history of ovarian cancer. Were you worried about PE after seeing them? Rather than, hey, make sure you work that patient up for a PE because they have cancer. So I used open-ended questions more to generate a discussion. And the response tended to be something of, yeah, I noticed that, but their pain was atypical. Here's why. And then if that was the case, I felt better. Or it would turn to, hey, thanks for noticing that. I didn't pick that up. Let me go ask them about that.
One of the things that I see is such a mixed message for new attendings is ordering practice. And I've seen this presented in several ways. One is, hey, you should be ordering more tests, and you're probably going to order more CTs than other people, going to have longer lengths of stay, etc. And I've seen conversations held with attendings fresh out in the similar position. Hey, you're ordering way too much stuff, way too many CTs, patients too long, you know, and this is just somebody who's brand new. And this is a stress that everyone feels, you know, like, how conservative should I be? How getting people through the department should I be? What was your experience with that?
I struggled with this, and I struggle with this still. And my biggest thing was my CT rates were high, my admission rates were high, and we get data comparing how we are amongst our group. And this was something that I then sought out to say, hey, how can I improve? I met with my department chair and I got feedback and tips and ways to reevaluate my practice. It became something where I knew that I had to take more time with patients to do a little more detailed history and physical. And sometimes that meant that I saw one, two, or even three less patients than people on the other side of the department. But I was okay with that because I felt more comfortable with the decisions of who I was scanning and who I was working up and who I was admitting, or who I was doing a stress test on. And it allowed me to do more shared decision-making with patients to create safe dispositions and test more appropriately.
Number one, recognize that you're going to be ordering more stuff. You just are. Number two, that you're going to need to take more time with patients. And that's actually a good thing. And as I hear you say that, I think about this pattern I've seen year after year of a couple of new attendings just in different places where I've worked, or maybe sister hospitals, where they'll try to model themselves after the attending who is almost like doorway diagnosis discharge the patient. And then they start doing that without the clinical experience. And then it becomes dangerous and there's bad outcomes. And you know, you send a patient home who definitely shouldn't have been sent home, thinking, I don't know, maybe it's like the Dunning-Kruger effect or a false sense of ability at that stage in training where, you know, it just consider that you are fresh at this. Your clinical sense is still developing.
Yeah. And I trained at a fantastic program at Michigan, and I learned a ton, and I read, and I could quote you whatever evidence-based article was on MRAP, but there's not a substitute for the years of experience and really knowing that, and it's a constant work in progress, and I've accepted that, but it's something that will get better with time and just being open to feedback and always reevaluating my practice and what I'm doing.
I work with people who have been doing this for almost 40 years. And I look to them And I see, and I work with one woman right now who's just such an ass kicker, and she runs the EMS programs, and she's just like super up on the literature and just loves it. And then in my old job, I worked with a guy who we called the Godfather because he just loved medicine so much. And watching them both practice, watching them deal with consultants, watching them come into a shift, manage patients, they both had this similar thing. It was just, you could say they had so much panache, they had so much style. And there's these little things that went into it. Wow, that's someone I want to model myself after. There's like these tiny little things, these little style points that you don't necessarily learn in residency because, you know, you don't see them as so important as you do once you're part of a group, once you're an attending.
This job, I am part of the team. I want to be that person that the colleague is glad to see on the schedule that's coming in after them. I want to be the person that covers shifts for colleagues when they can, that works with the medical director to be available, because the thing I've learned is reciprocity happens and it's key. I'll get to my shift 10 minutes early to give my colleague 10 minutes to take a breath and to wrap things up. And you know how it is when you see someone walk in the door, your brain can move to disposition land, and it's a good feeling.
Oh, the cavalry has arrived.
Yeah, and if it happens 10 minutes early, that's even better. It gives you a chance to give and get clean, sign out, do paperwork, do prescriptions, make calls for admissions. And a little bit I found goes a long ways.
Show up early. Be available, such as if your medical director needs something, hey, can someone do this committee? Can someone do that? Can someone do the shift? Be available. Although don't overdo it. Don't want to totally go all in because then you're going to lose the work-life balance.
Exactly. I have a wife and a 14-month-old daughter who I love seeing, and I've been able to do some committees, to study for my boards, but to take my daughter to the pool, to go to the gym, to see a dentist every once in a while, even though I hate that drill. You're right, it has to be a work-life balance. The first 6 months of my attending life, I was so focused on the job that I would be at work an hour early or 2 hours late doing charts, making sure everything was perfect, every test was ordered, and it just really took away from my home life, and it suffered and it didn't feel good. And I've had to learn to really prioritize things and realize that this is a job. And we talk about this with lawsuits and how NOIs and legal cases really get to the core of who we are because we make this job so much of who we are. And it is because we spent 20 years or more, it seems like, in undergrad and high school and residency. And my bigger commitments are my family, my loved ones.
I think when you start out, setting the expectation, especially if your significant other is not in medicine, or even if they're not in emergency medicine, say, here's what things are going to be like. And I would say for new attendings that staying several hours after your shift in the beginning, that's totally normal. People feel bad, and they feel bad in that, oh my God, I'm a total loser. I am not able to complete my charts or get out of here in time or disposition all my patients. You'll get it. It will come. Your significant other will see, hey, you've got an 8-hour shift. You're here 12 hours later. Well, just have that conversation beforehand. And you'll have these external pressures from the rest of the staff say, you're still here? I still get that. You're still here? What are you still doing here? Don't take it personally. That is a universal, but setting expectations with yourself, setting expectations with your significant other.
My wife knows that if I have a shift till 11, that she should just go to bed because it'll probably be 1:30 by the time I get home and eat and shower. And that's okay. And the longer I do this, the better and the easier it gets to get out a little closer to that time and to keep up with some charts. But I'm lucky that I work with colleagues that'll then push me to get out, or at least get out of the department and finish up the work I have to do and take over.
Alan, a new attending has just finished their first shift and you are the oncoming doc, and you see they look exhausted, somewhat dejected. What's the word of wisdom from what you've learned so far that you want to pass on to them?
Take a breath. It's a long year and there's a lot that you're going to learn, and you will make some mistakes, but learn from them. And there's stress and there's pressure. And all this burnout we talk about when you've been practicing for 15, 20 years, you can feel some of that after your first year. But if you feel it, recognize it and ask for help. Don't be afraid of struggling. Don't be afraid of worry. It happens and it's part of the year. But don't be afraid to ask for help. And you may be surprised at the results you get and how much it unburdens you to make that first year a little easier and a little better and get you home a little earlier.
That's it. End of the Hot Pocket, Melvis. It has been a pleasure as always.
Thank you for allowing me to be part of your pocket that is warm. And I thought there was some good stuff on there. But there's so much more to discuss. Oh, we're going to get so many more letters.
See you next month.
Bye.